Dr. Shamremis, before we re-engage in the 14th statement of the 17th chapter of Isaiah, Yeshaya, where God is telling us of what's going to happen in our immediate future, one of the things I would like to announce is that in the second hour of the program, at least for the next few days, maybe even longer than that, there are a number of questions that arose in communications with Adam Miller, who was the affiliates manager for GCN, that syndicated Shattering Myths here recently. And those questions that he asked, or the comments that he made, are all really germane to understanding the purpose of the show and to answering questions that listeners may have of this program. And so we're going to devote a considerable amount of time to answering them. Some of these questions there are those that make claims about the King James being authorized, and yet King James was a rather despicable fellow. How did the King James gain that status, and are there manuscripts that we can rely on? You know, what is the textual history? And so it behooves us to go over ground, even though we've covered this ground in the past, but we have many new listeners, on what is the textual fidelity of the Hebrew Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and the Greek Christian New Testament. Lots to learn about what condition we find these manuscripts, and how the oldest manuscripts differ from the current English translations, and how translations differ from the oldest manuscripts. I mean, it's just there's a lot of ground here to cover that is extremely important and interesting. He asked questions about how do we know that God's name is Yahweh? Are there other options for God's name that are worth the consideration? Is there any religion or variation of religion in the country that has more things right than wrong that is credible? And also, I'd like to discuss Adam's comments regarding this show and our position in the first hour relative to the malfeasance in America's and world governments, military endeavors, economic schemes as well. And then lastly, and I'm sure that Adam will send us more questions along the way, he said, you know, I want to know why you're not an advocate of conspiracy. It seems to be all around us. And I think it behooves us, particularly on the Genesis Communication Network, to discuss conspiracy, at least to the extent of why it isn't promoted on this program. So all of these things, I think they serve a broader agenda at this time, a common agenda at this time. We have new listeners, and therefore to reinforce these fundamental issues is important. The purpose of this program is to inform. And if we can inform not only our new listeners, but also our radio station affiliates and those responsible for affiliating the show so that we work collaboratively to advance our mutual interest, that is a very good thing. So I see a lot of commonality here, a lot of synergism. And so that's what we're going to do during our second hour here over the next week or so. Now, turning to Yeshaya 17, for those who have been listening for a while, we have systematically gone through this particular prophecy by Yahweh and have examined what it means relative to our situation today. And since we're nearing the end of the 17th chapter, before we go to the 18th, I'm going to summarize everything that God has said thus far. So right now, let's just turn our attention to the 14th verse. God says, approaching the timing of the Arab sunset, then behold, there will be terrorism. In the time before the dawn, it will be gone. This is the fate of those deceived regarding their merits who plunder and pillage us, and the lot of those who seek to conquer us, carrying off the spoils of war. There's so much interesting going on here. First of all, in the midst of the time that the world is referring to an Arab Spring, Yahweh is saying, no, it's going to be the Arab sunset. That those who have sought to destroy Israel are going to see the end of their influence. Then, as he correctly associates Arab and Islam and its demise with terrorism, God used a word for terrorism that literally means in the name of Allah. Ba'ala, a Hebrew word for terrorism. Ba meaning in or with, and Allah being the name of the Islamic wannabe God. Then behold, terrorism in the name of Allah. The sudden and dreadful, calamitous destruction perpetrated on civilian populations. Fear-inducing destruction which results in the cessation of life. All in the name of Allah. A listener today sent me an email saying that they were reading Questioning Paul, which, by the way, once we finish this review of Isaiah 17 and 18, since it speaks of the Syrian civil war and leading into the tribulation, once we finish our review of this material, we're going to begin a thorough presentation of Questioning Paul on this program. And in Questioning Paul, there's a very early on, there's a presentation of Chabaouk, which is Habakkuk, the first and the second chapters of Chabaouk, where God calls the founder of the Christian religion, the author of half of the Christian New Testament, the plague of death. Shaul is his given name, and he calls Shaul out by name to say that he is the plague of death, and makes no question about it. He identifies the timing of this man's writings, the nature of his personality. He designates his audience. He goes to great lengths to make certain that not only does he call him out by name, but he identifies Paul as the individual that he is condemning. That warning to all who would listen about Paul was given 666 years before Paul penned his first letter, the letter to the Galatians. And so one of our listeners said, doesn't that 666 offer some credibility to Yahusha's reference to 666 being the number of the man and system associated with the Torahless one? Christians would call him the Antichrist. He is the Torahless one in the last days. And the answer is, yeah, I think so. But you also said that the 666 is really in the name of Allah. That's why I bring it up here. Yes, I think so. I've read the oldest manuscript of that portion of Revelation. And the number 666 is not written out as a number. It is presented in the typical form of placeholders, where you have capital letters with a horizontal line over them. But this is not a placeholder for anything that is divine. And so you'd have to look at it and say, what is it really conveying? And if you look at the way that it's actually written on the oldest manuscript, it's Arabic, which is a derivative of Hebrew, for in the name of Allah. But the letters that are designated, particularly when they have a line under them, in Greek were designed to work as numerals. And when you look at what the letters represent, then you get the numerals 600, the numeral 6D, and the numeral 6. So I think both are possible. 6 is the number of man. You know, God's very focused on a formula. And that what he says in this formula is that man, which is mankind, men and women, which were created on the sixth day, carbon-based life form based upon the atomic weight of 6, that man, 6, in addition to God, who is one, equals God's idea of perfection. The reason that God created the universe is to engage in a relationship with us, to add us as his children to his nature, to his enjoyment, so that we would be able to spend time together as family. 6 plus 1. And so man in addition to man, just human institutions, if you will, apart from God. No influence of God, just man multiplied by man three times over. That's what God says is Torahless. That's what God says is adversarial. And so the number makes sense from that point of view. These are human institutions, human power. But it's also written as the name of Allah in the last days, very much like this word, Ba'Allah, for terrorism. This is terrorism in the name of Allah. Now, to show you that God pretty much aware of what's going on. Today, 99.9% of all terrorist acts are perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims who perpetrate those acts while screaming, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar does not mean God is great. Allah is not the Arabic word for God. Just as El and Elohim and Eloah are the Hebrew words for Almighty and for God, since Arabic is a derivation of Hebrew, Il is the Arabic word. Il and Illah are the Arabic words for God, not Allah. According to the Quran, Il and Illah are the Arabic words for God, and Allah is one of God's names, one of the Islamic God's names. In fact, in the Quran, that's not the first name of the Islamic God. The first name of the Islamic God is Lord, which, according to Yahweh, is Satan's name. Then he is called Ar-Rahman. There are surahs of the Quran, early surahs, that are entitled Ar-Rahman, and they designate Ar-Rahman as the name of the Islamic God. And then finally, Allah is introduced as a name of the Islamic God. So it's Allah is one of many names for Islam's God, a God modeled after Satan, who spends all of his time in hell, according to the Quran, whose principal goal is to terrorize humankind and to eliminate all choice so that Islam is imposed on everyone. Now, God has correctly identified the reality that Muslims yelling Allahu Akbar as they commit acts of terror. It's the Islamic prayer of fear, instituted by Muhammad himself, that Ba'Allah, in the name of Allah, was going to be the cause of terrorism. He was right. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. So here's Yahweh talking about the nature of the world as we're going to find it. He's talking about a time that is only about 13 years distant on our horizon. This is 2027 in all likelihood, maybe 2028. The time period that he is discussing here. We know this because Yah's calendar is evident. It's all based on the same six plus one concept that we discussed earlier. He made it manifest in creation 6 days. He created the universe the seventh day. He rested. We're still on the sixth day of creation. He made it evident through his establishment of the Shabbat, of the Sabbath, of 6 days that we can work doing our whatever we wish to do. The seventh day, he wants it to be set apart, special, the day that we rest and reflect on what Yahweh has done for us, what he has offered us. And it is in that realization that you can very easily go through time and you realize that 2,000 years from the time that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the Garden of Eden for corrupting Yahweh's testimony, that the means to re-enter Yah's protective garden, his garden of great joy, his place of great joy, was articulated to us, presented to us through God's relationship with Abraham. And exactly 2,000 years to the day that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden, Abraham came to meet with Yahweh on Mount Moriah and performed a dress rehearsal for Passover, a Pesach, codifying, affirming, establishing the covenant. 2,000 years to the day after that, in exactly the same spot, Yahusha, the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, the real name of the person that Christians mistake as Jesus, fulfilled Yahweh's promises relative to Passover, unyeasted bread, and first fruits, which was the primary reason that he had come, enabling the benefits of the covenant in so doing. And that occurred in 33 CE. So we go from 3968 BCE, when Adam and Chawa were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, to 1968 BCE, when Abraham and Yahweh affirmed the covenant as the means to reengage in a relationship with Yahweh, and 2,000 years exactly after that time, in 33 CE, we find Yahusha, the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, enabling Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah, the first four invitations to meet with God, which provide all of the covenant's benefits on exactly the same mountain. And this 2,000-year period of time isn't arbitrary. It is 40 Yovel. Yovels are discussed right after the invitations to meet with God in the book called Kara. It means to be invited, to be called out, and to meet, in this case, with God. Basis of Mikra. The Yovel years are based upon 7 times 7 plus 1, same model as Shavuot itself, the annual celebration of these reality. And 7 times 7 plus 1 is 50. You take 50 and you multiply it by the scriptural time of fulfillment. You know, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, for example. Moshe was on the top of Mount Horeb, receiving the Torah during 40 days. Yahusha was tested 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness. The children of Israel wandered in the wilderness prior to entering the promised land 40 years. 40 is the multiple. 50 is the timing of the Yovel. Yovel is not arbitrary either. Folks, Yovel designates the time that all slaves are freed. So we obtain our freedom, which is the purpose of the Torah. Paul was wrong when he says the Torah enslaved. It does exactly the opposite. It liberates. And it is also a time when all debts are forgiven. And so if you multiply 40 times 50, you get 2,000. That's why it's exactly 2,000 years from the time that Adam and Chawa were booted out of the Garden of Eden for having corrupted Yahweh's testimony, to the time that the means to re-enter Yahweh's company and to camp out with him was established through the covenant on Mount Moriah with Abraham, and exactly 40 Yovel, or 2,000 years from that moment, to the time that Yahusha fulfilled all of those covenant's promises, enabling its benefits on Mount Moriah, which means to revere Yah, in 33 CE. So folks, the math's not hard. Year 6,000 Yah, therefore, would be 2033 on our pagan calendars, 2,000 plus 33 CE. And now there will be at that time, two of Yahweh's invitations to meet with him, yet to fulfill, Yom Kippurim and Sukkah. We've already been told how Teruah, the fifth of the seven Mikras, is going to be fulfilled in this particular prophecy. The timing is evident. Welcome back to Shattering This. I was going through the rationale for asserting that this is likely to occur in late 2027 or 2028, could even be in the spring of 2029, Islam is going to cease to exist. But I think we're dealing with 2028 as the likely time. And so I was going through the timeline to show how you would be able to reasonably deduce that, recognizing that everything that God does is a plan of 6 plus 1. For human history, human history, once expelled from the garden to the time that we are returned to the garden, is going to be 6,000 years, and then we're going to spend a 7,000th year, or the last of the 7,000 years, in conditions where the entire earth is going to be returned to the Garden of Eden. That is the celebration of Sukkah, where we camp out with God for 1,000 years. It follows, in this case, it's called the millennial Shabbat, because it's a 1,000-year celebration of the Sabbath. And when you look at time from that perspective, and it's really easy to look at what are the seminal events in human history. They are the time that Adam and Chawa left a perfect relationship in a perfect condition with Yahweh, and they were expelled from the garden, which is a very real place. Happened to be in eastern Turkey, very likely under Lake Van, if you want to know the location of it. And at that point, over the next 2,000 years, man had his foibles and created lots of inappropriate conditions. It's the reason for the flood. It's something we've talked about at this show and demonstrated occurred in year 1,000, yeah, 1,000 years after Adam and Chawa were exiled from the Garden of Great Joy, the Gan Eden. And then 1,000 years later, we have Yahweh meeting with Abraham, asking Abraham to walk away from his country, which was Babylon, which God describes as the amalgamation of religion, politics, economic schemes, and militarism, saying, before you can engage in a relationship with me, you first must walk away from these things. And then God delineated through his conversations with Abraham the five requirements for participating in the covenant. And we've discussed those on many programs, but they are the means to salvation. There's also five benefits of the covenant, which are enabled through Yah's seven invitations to meet with him, and particularly the first four. And, of course, it is a 6+1 formula, even in those invitations, where we take six steps to God, and the seventh sukkah, we camp out with him. So as you look at the timing of leaving the garden in 3968 BCE, and then in 1968 BCE, 2,000 years later, 40 Yobel, we have the covenant as the means of reentering the opportunity to be able to camp out with God. And then 2,000 years later, 40 Yobel in 33 CE. Remember, there's no year zero, which is why on the Gregorian calendar, which is why you go from 1968 to 33 CE as being exactly 2,000 years. That's when Yahusha fulfilled the promises of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuot, enabling the benefits of the covenant, which were our eternal life, God making us perfect so that we can enter his presence, our adoption on Bukurim, where we become children of the covenant, and then on Shavuot, we're enriched and empowered. Those are the benefits of the covenant. They were enabled in year 4000 Yah, 33 BC in our pagan calendars. It isn't hard to figure out then when the last two of the seven Moed Mikre will be fulfilled. It's going to be 2,000 years, 40 Yobel, from 33 CE. You can do the math. 2,000 plus 33 is 2033 CE. That is going to be year 6,000 Yah. On Yom Kippurim, he is going to return. That's if you want to put that on your pagan calendar, it's going to be October 2nd at sunset in Jerusalem, about 6:20 p.m. on Monday, October 2nd, 2033 p.m. And then 5 days later, after he has obliterated all traces of religion and politics and militarism from the earth, he is going to reestablish the entire earth in the conditions experienced during the Garden of Eden, and we're going to be able to camp out with him on this planet for 1,000 years. That's the plan. Now, at the end of that 1,000 years, we start a new beginning. God creates a new universe with us as witnesses. It'll be a grand spectacle to watch the birth of a universe. Now, if you recognize all of that, then all you have to do is you realize at the time of Jacob's trouble, like everything that God has described, this tribulation is 7 years long. So all you got to do is subtract 7 years from 2033, and you know when the tribulation is going to start. It will start in the fall of 2026. So this war, according to this testimony, begins immediately after Yisrael is dissected. I mean, God tells us that the Syrian war, the destruction of Damascus at the hands of Islamic terrorists, leads to the dismemberment of Israel so that the world forces Israel to surrender the West Bank after it has surrendered Gaza, making the nation about 5 miles wide at its waist, and they said its waist will be thinned, and that will make the nation no longer viable, unsustainable, and that Muslims will capitalize on that. But he says, but before the Muslims capitalize on it and start this Magog war, and before you see a flood of 150 million Muslims flooding in from the 50 Islamic countries and from 50 countries that have a significant percentage or population of Muslims, that God is going to fulfill the fifth of his seven Mikra. That'll be in the fall of 2026. We're talking about Teruah. Teruah is trumpets. It is when God is going to glean from this earth about 7,000 individuals who have embraced the terms and conditions of his covenant. Then all hell is going to break loose. But like a loving father, Yahweh is going to remove his children from the earth before this war is unleashed against his people. He speaks then of horrible terrorism. And he uses in the name of Allah to describe this terror. He even tells us that it's going to be those who think that they can pillage and conquer and accept the spoils of war as a religious duty, as a religious privilege, that no, you can't get away with that. I'm not going to let you do that to my people and to my land. So that's how we know the timing. That's how we know who the perpetrators are. God was not the least bit coy here. He was blunt. He was detailed. He was specific. Not only about the timing and the cause and effect of all of these events, but who would be perpetrating them and who would be victimized by them. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm a fairly rational individual. I'm driven by evidence and reason. And I'm here to tell you, there is no way to thoughtfully consider what God has said in the 17th chapter of Yashaya Isaiah and what he will say in the 18th chapter and not recognize that there is no chance whatsoever that 2,750 years ago that a man got this right by chance. Particularly when you consider that for the vast preponderance of that time, a united Israel didn't even exist to be thinned. A nation of Syria didn't even exist to be overturned. Islam hadn't even been invented. And for all of those things, detail after detail to occur in the order that he said they were going to occur in, perpetrated in the way that he delineated them, the odds of chance fulfillment in this case of a prophet getting this much right 2,700 years in advance of it occurring when none of the conditions existed at the time and wouldn't exist for most of the time that are described is beyond imagination. It would be akin to being struck by lightning on seven different continents on the same day of the year in seven successive years. Impossible. Prophecy is how God proves that he inspired the words that we are considering. It's how we know they are from him. He's never wrong. Now, the reason he's not wrong is because his nature is as light. And as Einstein pointed out to us, proved to us, time is relative on a photon of light. In fact, on light, time simply exists, which means that if you are energy-based, you can witness the past, the present, and future all at the same time. An energy-based entity can see our future and report our future in our past. So he's not predicting the future. He's simply reporting what he has witnessed. This is what he is seeing. It is what we are now seeing right before our very eyes. God has proved his existence. He has proved his authorship of this document, of the scroll that bears Yashaya, which means salvation is from Yah's name at the top of it. And he's done more than that. He's told you exactly what's going to happen in your future. Beyond that, he has included his guidance, his instruction, along with every word that he has said. It's not just reporting future events. God has provided his commentary so that we understand the consequence of human activity, the consequence of rejecting him, the consequence of perpetrating terror in the name of Allah. Who would have thought 2,700 years ago that a religion that wouldn't even be invented for another 1,500 years, that religion would call its God Allah, and that its signature act would be terrorism. And that at the time that this is speaking of, that terrorism in the name of Allah would be 99.9% of the terrorism in the world. And that Allah's devotees, today's Muslims, would collectively see Israel as a place that they need to attack and destroy. It was unfathomable at the time of this writing, but it is today's reality. It is undeniable. That's why even the smallest aspects of what is conveyed here, as God would say, the yods, the smallest letter, the yods, and the tittles, the strokes of the letters, that we ought to examine all of them if we wish to understand everything that he has to say to us. It's in our interest to do so. Welcome back to the last segment of Shattering Myths for today. We're trying to work our way through this amazing statement in Yeshaya, Isaiah 17, 14. God first tells us that in the timing of what is called the Arab Spring, that we are approaching the timing of the Arab sunset. In other words, the Arab sunset, Arab, will follow the Arab Spring. He's right. And he says, then behold, terrorism in the name of Allah, Ba'Allah, sudden and dreadful calamitous destruction perpetrated on civilian populations in the name of Allah. In the time before the dawn, it's over. It's gone. Islam is rooted out. It's eradicated. The threat of Islamic terrorism is no more. God told us specifically how he was going to eliminate it. He was going to blow the flood of tidal wave, if you will, of Islamic militants out of Israel. Blow them away. It's over. The Arab sunset, by dawn, it'll be over. Is God's going to end this war very quickly? Then he tells us the fate of those who have been deceived regarding their merits. That's the nature of all religions, and Islam is the worst of them. Now, Christians are told that they're saved. They're born again. They have a relationship with Jesus. That's all untrue. But in Islam, they're told, oh, that Allah is the only God, and that Muhammad was his prophet, when Muhammad didn't predict anything accurately. Was one of the most disgusting men who ever lived. And that Allah promises direct entrance into his whorehouse if you kill in his cause. They've been deceived. And the Allah, who is modeled after Satan, is deceived regarding his merits, just as he has deceived Muslims about their merits. And God says not only are they deceived regarding their merits, that their utter destruction, eliminating them, this Arab sunset of terrorism in the name of Allah, that it's the justice recompense for those who try to plunder and pillage us. He's gone into a shared identity here. Israel and Israelites are his, and that's why he uses us in this particular case. And of course, it's the Quran's eighth surah that is called the Spoils of War, and it begins by saying that stealing is lawful and good. Well, God says, no, it's not. He says, this is the lie, the lot, the recompense and retribution of those who seek to conquer us, carrying off the spoils of war. Islam, from its very beginning, from the first day of the Islamic era, Muhammad has turned Islam's rage against Israelites, against Yahudim, against Yahweh. And they, for 1,400 years, have sought to conquer and destroy that which God has said he loves. It is Satan as the adversaries last stand. So God has told us not only who is going to assail Israel, how they're going to do so with terrorism. He's told us that their calamitous roars, which he has spoken of in previous statements, is going to be in the name of Allah. Allahu Akbar, the Islamic prayer of fear, where Muhammad motivated the first Muslims when he attacked Kabar, which was a farming community of Jews, not too far, in fact, kind of between Mecca and Medina. That when the farmers were coming out to attend to their crops, Muhammad and his armed militants were there by the thousands, and Muhammad told them to tell them that their God was greater than Yahweh, Allahu Akbar. Satan wants to be above the Most High. And shouting Allahu Akbar in a calamitous roar, committing terrorist acts in the name of Allah, this will be the Arab sunset. Yahweh will wipe them out. The due recompense for those who would seek to pillage and plunder Yisrael and Yisraelites, for those who seek to conquer and carry off the spoils of war. So rather than the Arab Spring, this is the Arab sunset, the ultimate consequence of Islam's destructive and deadly nature. As I've shared, the word Arab, meaning lack of light, is indistinguishable in the Hebrew text from Arab, the desolate places and the race universally associated with Islamic terrorism. As a result of Islam, Arab and Muslim are promoted as being synonymous today and indistinguishable. This religion proves every day that Yahweh's prophecies of it are accurate. They run amok in the world, destroying everything in the religion's path. But God is going to hold them accountable. Well, thank you for listening to Shattering Myths. I will be with you at this time tomorrow.